Morning. Today's daf mechoros is daf lamed. We are in the mission on the top of lamed amid aleph hachashed al hashvius. We're talking about people who are suspected over yisurim. Why are we here? So that's a large question, but I'm just going to talk about mechoros in the fourth parak in the mishnah in today's daf. But why are we here? So it has to do with the number of mishnayos that we saw in yesterday's daf. The mishnayos in yesterday's daf talks about somebody who is a mumche and is going to be presiding over looking at a mum. When you see a blemish, when you look at a blemish, so you are going to make the determination of whether or not it is in fact a mum kavur, it's a permanent blemish, which of course would allow now the kohen to eat it, or if it's a suffik bechor, the owner to eat it. But in other words, you can't eat it without a mum kavur, or it's not a mum kavur. And if it's just a mum over, if it's not even a mum at all, so then, of course, you have to keep it in abeyance and just wait until it develops a blemish. And then and only then are you allowed to eat it. So that is the mishnayos that we saw yesterday. We talked about integrity yesterday. Integrity in terms of, can you get paid in order to look at it? Well, if you get paid, that obviously is going to impair your judgment because now you're no longer objective. You're getting paid. So that was one discussion that we had yesterday. There were some people who did, in fact, get paid for looking at a mum, a yala. The Mishnah points to him as being somebody who was extraordinarily scrupulous, so therefore he got paid. The Gemara went through some of the discussion yesterday. Well, if he's getting paid, isn't that going to at least somewhat impair his judgment? Gemara talked about that. And then the Gemara went into a very broad discussion yesterday about getting paid to do acts of judgment, in other words, being a judge or being a witness and getting paid for doing either one of the two. And the Mishnah has talked yesterday about getting paid in general to do a mitzvah. Let's say you are going to be involved in the paraduma, the sprinkling of the paraduma, or for that matter, as we learned in the Gemara yesterday, let's say you're going to get paid to teach Torah. So these are activities of mitzvahs, and can you get paid for those activities? Yesterday we had a long discussion regarding the difference between compensation versus payment versus wages. Compensation is perfectly legitimate, and that's fine. But in terms of wages, so generally speaking, you don't get paid for either judging or performing any mitzvah for that matter. The minhag nowadays is that malamdim do get paid. So I pointed to Tosfos yesterday on the Chav Tes Amud Aleph, who discusses that very topic. It's not a new topic. It's a very old topic. And then the Mishnah turns its attention to somebody who has in the past acted illegally when it comes to a bechor. As a bechor, you know that it has to get a blemish, but it has to get a blemish on its own. You're not allowed to put a blemish on the animal. And meanwhile, if somebody says to himself, look, I've been holding on to this bechor for a while, no one's looking, and you put a mum on the animal. So this is an isser. We're going to talk more about the isser later in the Masechta. But at that point in time, if you're caught, so you're now what's called chashad ala bechoros. You now have a history, you have a track record of the fact that you were not careful about the isser bechor. And as a result of that, with the Mishnah yesterday talked about, because he has these suspicions, so therefore, how do we conduct themselves regarding this individual? Good. And then, while we were there, so then the Mishnah is launched into a long discussion of what if a person is chashed on Shemitah? And what if a person is chashed on selling Truma? Etc., etc. So that's how we got into the discussion of people who have a chshad, who are suspected of behaving in a certain way because of past history. Meaning, not based on rumors. But suspicion over here is just simply based on past history. With that stated now, we're going to pick it up right where we left off yesterday. We're on Lamed Amud Aleph. We're at the Mishnah on the top of the Amud, towards the top of the Amud. Chashad al Shvius. Einu chashad al Maisra. So now, let's say, in terms of Shemitah produce, so you are not careful. And historically, you have not been careful. Now, is that going to affect your status and reputation regarding other Isurim? The basic point of the Mishnah is no. The basic point of the Mishnah is that, generally speaking, just because you are suspected and are careless in one area in halacha does not necessarily mean that you're careless in other areas of halacha, even if they're somewhat related. So over here, the Mishnah now says that if you're chashad on Shemitah, so that doesn't mean that you're necessarily going to be chashad on Maisros. Now, Maisros over here, as will become clear in the Gemara, is talking about Maisros Sheni. Could be talking in general about Trumas and Maisros, but you'll see, though. It's very clear in the Gemara, it's talking about Maisros Sheni. So, okay, fine. So the person's lax in Shemitah. That doesn't mean he's lax in Maisr Sheni. And the opposite also is true. HaChashel al Maisr Sheni, HaChashel al Shvius. If you're suspected about Maisr Sheni, that doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to be suspected on being lax in the area of Shemitah. Hachashel al zeh ve'alzeh, chashel al taharos. Now, if you are suspected on both Shemitah and on Meister Sheni, so at that point in time now, so there is a case against you that, generally speaking, you're lax, and so therefore you have lost all credibility even as far as Tumah Tahara is concerned. You can no longer say, oh, this is in the state of Tahara, I insured it. Yeah, but you're the same person who does not seem to care about Shemitah and does not seem to care about Meister Sheni, and so therefore you lack any credibility regarding other areas of halacha as well. All this is going to be discussed in more detail in the Gemara, so we'll wait until for the Gemara to give us some sort of understanding, some sort of framework of why all this should be. Now, a person could be suspected over Tumah Tahara. In other words, he's just not careful about Tumah Tahara. But at the same time, he's careful about Shemitah, and he's careful about Meister Sheni. It doesn't work necessarily in the other way. And again, when we get to the Gemara, we'll understand why. Now, if you are suspected in one area in halacha, so that means in that area in halacha that you're suspected about, so you can't serve as a judge, you can't serve as a witness, because we have a word in English for that, and that's called the hypocrite. Meaning that if you are somebody who is not careful about that particular halacha, and you're like, hey, you know what, we have a case coming up. Would you judge in this case? Would you testify in this case? An area in which you yourself are not careful about, so in that part, you've lost your reliability and you've lost your credibility regarding that particular area of halacha. The basic idea of the Mishnah is that even though you're suspected in one area, and again, suspicion over here meaning that you had a history of being lax in that area, so that it's localized. It doesn't necessarily extend and branch out. It's true that in one scenario in the Mishnah, it did branch out, but as well, the Gemara is going to explain that in just a moment. But what's the underlying theme of the Mishnah? It basically goes like this, and what I'm saying now is going to be so clear as we start with the Gemara. The idea is that because you're lax in one area in halacha does not necessarily mean you're lax in another area in halacha, because here's what we do in our heads all the time. When we organize information in our head, so we have things which are really serious and things which are not so serious. So for the things that are really serious, obviously we're going to be careful about. For the things that are not so serious, okay, fine, so we'll let it go. Let it go meaning we shouldn't, but in other words, it's not so serious. So this is how we organize information in our head, and we do this all the time. And so what the Gemara's discussion is basically going to be is the following. Is it possible that you can construct an argument that Meister Sheni is really serious, Shemitah is not so serious? And the Gemara's answer is going to be, yeah, you could do that. And because people can do that, so just because you're lax in the lighter area does not mean that you're going to be lax in the more serious area. Now, when I say lighter and serious, by the way, we're talking about perception. We're not talking about reality. Meaning they're both mitzvos and they're both isurim, and they both need the same degree of care. We're just talking about how people think. And the Gemara is going to explain that people can construct arguments that one is more serious than the other. Good. And we can go in either direction. Let's see all this in the Gemara. My time is shvius lo baichoma meiser kevin da baichoma chamer le. So the Gemara explains like this. That when it comes to shvius, so the Shemitah produce, so where can it be eaten? Anywhere in Eretz Yisrael. Doesn't matter. You could be anywhere in Eretz Yisrael, you can eat Shemitah produce. Meiser Sheni, that can only be eaten in Yerushalayim. Oh, so you see that Meiser Sheni is more serious than Shemitah. In other words, I have to go to Yerushalayim to eat my Meiser Sheni. Okay, fine. So Meiser Sheni, I'm going to be super careful about. Shemitah, not so much. So that's the constructed argument that we make in our heads why Meiser Sheni is more serious. So just because I'm lax in Shemitah does not necessarily mean that I'm going to be lax in Meiser Sheni. Because we can see the argument of that he made that Meister Sheni is more serious. We can also go the other direction. Hachashon al Meister, my time, my Meister is slay pejon. She is given to come mitzvah alay, but lay slay pejon chamir alay. We can also go the other way. Meister Sheni is not a big deal. You know what you can do with your Meister Sheni? You can actually take it and transfer it onto money. You can be poda, you can redeem it. How serious can be the Isser of Meister Sheni when I can move the Isser to another item? I can't do that with Shemitah. Shemitah produce, now there is a discussion that we've had numerous times about exchanging the Shemitah with something else, but the Shemitah itself is always going to retain its Kedusha. The original Shemitah is always going to retain its Kedusha. It is unredeemable. And so therefore, it's more serious. So here now, we just constructed an argument how Meister Sheni, I could relax because I could redeem it. I can move the Isser to something else. But Shemitah, I can't. So again, just because I am lax in Meister Sheni does not necessarily mean I'm going to be lax in Shemitah. Good. So we see how people can construct arguments in either way, And what that tells us now is that just because you're lax in one area doesn't necessarily mean you're lax in another area, because that other area could be more severe, at least in our minds.
Why do we apply the principle of tadir sheno tadir tadir kodam? And because we have like you know, shemitah only like once every 7 years, whereas like...
Again, we're looking over here how people think. In other words, this is not halachic principles that are going to be guiding any decision. This is just simply a construct of how people think and how people view halacha and rationalize halacha. Now, the next line of the Mishnah is that if you're lax in the area of Shemitah and Maaser Sheni, so for sure you're going to be lax in Tumah Tahara. Gemara assumes that when we're talking about Tumah Tahara, we're talking about Tumah Tahara on a rabbinic level. And here now, it's an inescapable conclusion. If you're lax in areas of Da'araisa, so for sure you're going to be lax in areas of Da'rabanan. Good, that's the Gemara's point. Next. V'yesh chashad al tahara, it's my time, and here Da'rabanan chashad, Da'araisa lo chashad. Now over here, the counter-argument, it makes perfect sense. Meaning, I'm lax in Tumah Tahara, again, rabbinic Tumah Tahara. So, okay, fine, that's rabbinic. And in my mind, I've constructed this idea, it's just rabbinic. But Da'araisa, though, that I'm very careful about. So again, I hope everyone understands. The Gemara isn't condoning none of these thought processes. It's just that we can make an argument that just because he's lax in one area does not necessarily mean he's lax in other areas, because what he did is he compartmentalized and he categorized, this is more severe than that. Uriminu. Now the Gemara, by this last point, is a little bit bothered because we do have another braisa. Neman al taharas, neman al shvias. Now, in this braisa, it says that if a person is trustworthy regarding Tumah Tahara, he is going to be trustworthy by Shemitah. Okay? Now, what would be the inference? The Gemara makes it. Ha-chashid chashid. That if that means that if you're suspected on one, you're going to be suspected on the other. Now, Amar Abi Lai, now, that's a problem because that goes against what we learned in our Mishnah. In our Mishnah, we learned that when you are suspected about Tumah Tahara, that doesn't necessarily transfer over to Shemitah. Because Tumah Tahara, we're talking about rabbinic Tumah Tahara. Okay, so he's lax in the rabbinic areas. But in his mind, oh, but Da'araisas, I'm very careful about. But meanwhile, the inference of the braisa would seem to indicate otherwise. It would seem to indicate that when a person is lax in Tumah Tahara, he's also going to be lax in Shemitah as well. So how do we deal with this inference? So which goes against our Mishnah. So Amar Rav Elai Masisa and Kishereinu Shenog B'tzina B'soch Beisa. Our Mishnah is talking about a case where we see that he's careful about Shemitah, not only publicly, but privately as well, in his own home. Now, I know it only begs the question, how do we know what happens privately in his own home? I don't have the best answer for that question. But the Gemara's assumption is that there is some window we have into his private life. I mean that figuratively, not literally. But there's some way of knowing what's happening. And so when we establish that in his private life, he's conducting this manner, so we know he really cares about it. Rabbi Yana, Rabbi Shmuel, Amar Kegon to have a chashal atavayu. V'asi kamei Rabbanu v'kabel atavayu. V'hadu ichshed achad minayhu. Damin amigo de chashed aha chashenami aidach. The Gemara gives another suggestion in terms of how to understand the braisa. The braisa, there's a little bit of a history involved. What's the history? Happens to be that this person is a known violator of Tumah Tahara and Shemitah. So historically, both of them have not been...
Bad track
record. Right. Both of them have not been on his top 10 mitzvahs that I fulfill. Okay, to be nice, to be generous. And so what ends up happening is that he realizes that he needs reformation, he needs a little bit of tshuva in his life, and he goes over to the Rav. Now, this is not the way our religion works, but he goes over to the Rav and he says, you know what? I'm ready to make amends. I'm ready to improve in both areas. Okay, great. Good. Way to go. And then we see that he starts sliding in one area. Ah, so the Gemara says, okay, now that's what the Bryce is describing. With the history given that he was lax in both areas, and we know he was lax in both areas, and given that he tried to make reformation, and he made a commitment to being scrupulous in both areas, but once he's now becomes lax in one area, we are now left to assume, well, he slid in the other one as well because of his track record and because of his history. Okay. Continuing in the Gemara. Amar Rabba Bar Bachanan Rav Yochanan Zu Divrei Rabbi Akiva Stimasa. Our entire Mishnah that was just presented to us, that we just explained for the last 10-15 minutes, our entire Mishnah is the opinion of Rabbi Akiva Stimasa. Now, it's Rabbi Akiva, meaning it's not that's not his last name. Stimasa. So Rashi over here offers a couple of pshatim. Remember Rashi in the beginning of Masechta Megillah? Same discussion. In terms of what does that mean, Rabbi Kiva Stimasa? So one pshat that Rashi says over here, it's on the bottom of the Amud, by the way, if you want to see the Rashi inside. So Rabbi Kiva Stimasa is based on the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Stam Mishnah Rabbi Meir, Stam Brisa Rabbi Nasan, Vekula Aliba de Rabbi Kiva. Meaning that we know that when you have a Stam Mishnah, an anonymous Mishnah in all of Shas, so generally speaking, there are of course exceptions, but generally speaking, it follows the opinion of Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir was a Talmud of Rabbi Akiva. Truth of the matter is Rabbi Meir had more than one Rebbe. But generally speaking, is a Talmud of Rabbi Akiva. So that means to say that Rabbi Akiva stimasa because he's responsible for the Stam Mishnayos. And by the way, he's also responsible for the Stam Brises as well. Rabbi Nelson, who was also a student of Rabbi Akiva. But Rashi says, but I tell the truth, I don't love that pshat because we talk about other... other Tanaim, given the name Stimasa, Rabbi Menachem Stimasa, Rabbi Shimon Stimasa, meaning if the whole idea is the Stam Mishnah is to Rabbi Meir, which is a student of Rabbi Akiva, and so therefore we call him Rabbi Akiva Stimasa, so he should be the only one being given this title. Nobody else should be given this title. Okay, so Rashi doesn't love that pshat. Rather, what is the pshat that Rashi likes? Ela Rov Mishnah Zika B'Rashah Stumos Alibet Rabbi Akiva. What it means to say is as follows. It means that most Stam Mishnayos throughout Shas do in fact follow the opinion of Rabbi Akiva. Because again, Rabbi Akiva was a Rebbe to Rabbi Meir, and Rabbi Meir, the anonymous Mishnayos follow like him. But this Pshat is different than the first Pshat. In the first Pshat, we were saying that the Mishnayos are going like Rabbi Akiva. Well, over here, what we're saying is that generally speaking, when we have anonymous Mishnayos, they're going to end up following like Rabbi Akiva because they follow Rabbi Meir. In any event, our Mishnah is following like the opinion of Rabbi Akiva, which means that what's our basic point of the Mishnah? You're lax in one area, okay, but that doesn't extend to other areas of halacha. Meaning you're lax in one area in halacha, okay, it's not good, but in other words, we're localizing, and it does not sweep over, and it does not influence or affect the rest of your life, and you don't lose your reputation over the other areas of halacha. That's our Mishnah. That's Rabbi Akiva. Now, according to the Chachamim, when you are suspected on Shemitah, by default, you're also going to be suspected on Meiser and Meiser Sheni as well. Why should that be? The Gemara is going to explain. Man Chachamim Rabbi Yehuda. So that's the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. Deba Asreid Rabbi Yehuda Shvi is Chamir Alei. Because in the community of Rabbi Yehuda, Shemitah was really serious. They took their Shemitah really seriously. So therefore, if you are lax in the area of Shemitah, which is really serious, so then you're going to be lax by Meister Sheni, which is less serious. Now, how do I know that in Rabbi Yehuda's community, Shemitah was really serious? So the Gemara over here gives us a small little snippet in terms of how do I know that in Rabbi Yehuda's community, they were so serious about Shemitah. Now, it's not going to be the most positive way the Gemara is going to illustrate this point. It's going to be in rather a negative way. But two people are arguing with one another, and then the argument got personal. And now, in this personal argument that exists between one person and another, so now the barbs start flying. And here we go. So one person says to another, you're a convert, the son of a convert. Okay? And that it was meant as an insult. Okay? Amarle, the counter argument, Taisi Li, Dola Achri Peshriyas Kavasech. He says, look, okay, that may be, but at least I don't eat Shemitah produce like you. Now, when you and I hear that, we're thinking to ourselves, okay, that's the worst of the worst. That's a terrible insult. No, we think of it, okay, fine. Obviously, in Rabbi Yehuda's community, in other words, culture is obviously really important. And in Rabbi Yehuda's community, so that response, that retort was the worst. If you refer to somebody who eats Shemitah produce. Now, when I say eat Shemitah produce, by the
way,
again. So we have to go back to the ideas of either we're talking about a field that was guarded during the Shemitah and that those produce are going to be prohibited, or we could be talking about post-biur, after the time where it needs to be destroyed. Okay, so, right, but the idea is very simple, that when you are described and defined as somebody who's lax in the area of Shemitah in Rabbi Yehuda's community, that's the worst. And if you're lax in that area, so for sure you're going to be lax in other areas as well. Igadarmi, the Gemara has another version. I'm a rabbi, Barbachan, I'm Rav Yochanan, Zudiv, Rabbi Kiva Stimasa, Avachachom, Ramam, Chashal HaMaister, Chashal HaShvias. In the second version, it's the same basic point, but just in the other direction. that when you are suspected about Maaser Sheni, so at that point in time, you don't have credibility regarding Maaser Sheni. You also don't have credibility regarding Shemitah as well. Uman Chacham and Rabbi Meir he. Now this is the opinion of Rabbi Meir. The Amar Chashal Adavar Echad Havei Chashal Lechol Tarakola. Rabbi Meir's position over here is the extreme position, which is you're lax in one area in halacha, so you are not afforded credibility and reputation regarding any area in halacha. That's Shita's Rabbi Meir. You can connect it. The Gemara doesn't do it, but you can connect it to Rabbi Meir's Choshesh Lemiyuta.
I know. That's against them, no?
It fits. It works. So, Rabbi Yonah, Rabbi Yirmiyahu, Talmidei, Rabbi Zer, V'Amrila, Rabbi Yonah, Rabbi Zer, Talmidei, Rabbi Yochanan, Chad Amar. And basically what the Gemara is going to do now is everything we just said, but just say it over in the name of other Amarayim. I'm going to read quickly because the Gemara is basically going to be repeating the point. If you are suspected by Shemitah, you're suspected by Maaser Sheni. And that's Rabbi Yehuda, because remember, in Rabbi Yehuda's community, Shemitah is really serious, and once you show a laxity of Shemitah, so then you're certainly not going to be careful about Maaser Sheni. And the other one says, no, that when you are suspected about Maaser, you're going to be suspected on Shemitah. Not necessarily because Meiser is more chamor, but because this is the sheet of Reb Meir. Once you're suspected in one area, so you're suspected in Kol HaTarakula. Okay. Ditanya. The Gemara quotes a Brisa. It's a Tosefta. In Demai. Amar Shekiba Alav Divrei Chaveris. Okay. Now, probably you remember back in the day when you were in school, so you remember you pledge allegiance. Now, a pledge of allegiance is obviously, in this country, to the flag. And I'm sure you know the rest. Back in the day, so you had what was called chaveris. We use this term all the time throughout the Gemara. A chaver is somebody who's scrupulous in halacha and is very careful about halacha, to the point where he's keeping the details of Tumah Tahara, of Truma Samaisros, and so that's when you are buying Truma, not buying Truma, when you are taking Truma from him, when you're taking Maaser Rishon from him, or Maaser Sheni, or anything that is assumed to be in a state of Tahara, it is in a state of Tahara. It does not. Because he's a chaver, so he's afforded the reputation of everything that he handles is good.
Is that a chazak?
It's being called a chaver.
Assumption chazaka that is.
I mean, once he's a chaver. Okay, so this is now being a chaver. Now the other side of it is an amaritz. An amaritz is somebody who is not careful about the way he treats Tumah Tahara and Trumas HaMaisros, and sometimes he doesn't even take off Trumas HaMaisros, and this is an amaritz. Now that, of course, is very binary. In other words, it's like the old westerns. There's a good guy, there's a bad guy, and like there's nothing in between. Now, of course, there is something in between. It's most people. So somewhere between a chaver and an amaretz. So how do you assume the status of chaver? So obviously, it's based on your performance of mitzvos and halacha and how careful you are about halacha. Okay. But how do you garner the status? So part of it is a pledge, right? It's a Kabbalah, right? So you pledge of allegiance, right? Last night as I was preparing, so I was actually thinking of writing up, well, what would it sound like? What would the pledge of allegiance of the chaver sound like? So I did not author it. I did not write it up. But, okay. But obviously the pledge is not nearly enough, meaning the pledge is just but a pledge. In other words, obviously you have to know and see that he is, in fact, scrupulous, but it starts with a Kabbalah. It starts with a pledge. And so what we're going to be discussing a lot in the rest of today's daf is this pledge of allegiance to becoming a chaver. So Ama Aret, so he is an Ama Aret, Shekiba Alav Divrei Chaveros, and accepted upon himself Divrei Chaveros, V'nechshel Echel Nechshel Chol HaTarakula, Divrei Rebbe Meir. So once he becomes suspected of one area, so he's going to be suspected in all areas. Now, by the way, meaning over here in this brisa, as it's presented to us, it's not as dramatic as it was previously. Because over here, he started as an Amaretz. And so now he's trying to take upon himself this status of Chaveros and the meticulousness of a Chaver. So over here, if he slips in one area, it's safe to assume, says Rameir, that he's slipping in every area as well. Again, especially when you consider his history and track record.
Intentionally, right?
That's too much. There's no way I would know. V'chachamim omrim eino nechshad ela la'oso davar belvad. Now the chachamim say, no, we can localize it, Meaning if he happens to be lax in one area in halacha, we keep it to that one area of halacha. Again, going back to the same machlokas we saw back between Rabbi Kiva Stimasa and the Chachamim. Similarly, you have somebody who converts, and they prove to be lax in one area in halacha. So at that point in time, they have lost their credibility regarding other areas of halacha. Now, does that mean that he reverts to being a non-Jew? And the answer, of course, is no. But here's where the Gemara says it, beferish. V'arei k'Yisrael mumar. He's the Yisrael mumar. So, nafka mina, the ikadish kedusha of kedushin. Meaning, and if he goes over to a woman, he's a mekadosh woman, she accepts the kedushin, she is a married woman. Even though historically he was not a Jew. And he converted. And now he's showing that he does not care about certain areas in halacha. And even though he has given the status of Yisrael mumar, but still, a Jew is a Jew. It's non-reversible. Tanu Rabbanan. Havala Kabel.
He's not accepted. Rabbi Meir is not accepted. Rabbi Meir's view is not accepted.
This is not Rabbi Meir's view.
No, yeah, I'm saying that. But oh. Rabbi Meir was saying that if somebody's doubted about one.
Well, I'm sorry. There's a lot more Gemara coming up.
Okay.
So let's hold. Tanu Rabbanan. Habala kabel divrei chaver is chutz midavar echad ein mekablin oso. Now here we're on the front end. Here we're at the point where they are accepting upon themselves. So here, let's say he pledges allegiance, and in his pledge of allegiance, so he has a bunch of fine print. He has some caveats. Look, I'm going to be a chaver, and I'm going to accept myself upon myself. All the laws of truma tahara and truma samaisros, truma tahara,
except.
And he's very clear in the front end. You know, God bless his honesty. So, but on the front end, he says, but not this and not this. Okay, and not this. Okay, and maybe he had to come more, some more. So, chutz midavar echan. And the truth of the matter is that even if it's just one thing, it doesn't matter. Ein mekablin oso. So, in other words, even the pledge from the beginning is not a good pledge. In other words, to become a chaver, you have to be all in. Ove kocham shebal kabel divetor chutz midavar echan ein mekablin oso. Same thing is true regarding a person who is a candidate for conversion. So a non-Jew who wants to be a candidate for conversion, he says, look, I'm in. Just, there's one thing, however, that I just can't accept. So at that point in time, that's not all in. So for conversion, also, you have to be all in. Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda, Amar, Afilu Diktok Echem Edivrei Sofrim. Now, Rabbi Yosef, adds to this, not only do you have to be all in on the Daraisas, you have to be all in on the Darabanas as well. V'chein, Ben Levi Shabbal HaKabal Divra Leviya. And let's say you have a Ben Levi who is now going to pledge allegiance to the tribe of Levi. V'kohen Shabbal HaKabal Divra Kohuna. Same thing with a Kohen. So, Chutz Midavar Echad. And again, in their pledge of allegiance, there's some fine print. I'm ready to take on everything, except. And he just notes one thing that he's not ready to take on. So
is Levi or Kohen by birth?
Yeah, I understand that. We're talking about now, given the status of having this reputation, that everything you handle is going to be tahor. So, ein mekablin oso shenemar makrivez damashlamim ha'avoda mesur livnei Aharon. Right, the pasuk. Right, the Gemara doesn't quote the pasuk in full, but it ends off by saying that he is a descendant of Aharon. Not only does he have to be a biological descendant of Aharon, but he also has to be an ideological descendant of Aharon, and he has to be fully on board and fully committed. Gemara over here says it really strongly that if there's something about the avoda you just simply do not subscribe to, right? I'm in on every part of the avoda except that. So at that point in time, that's not a kabbalah. And the Gemara says, ein lo chelik b'kuhuna, meaning, and he doesn't get a portion as well. Meaning, it goes without saying he's not doing the avoda, but he's also not being the recipient as well. Tanu Rabbanan. Habal kabal divrei chaveros. So a person who accepts upon himself chaveros. So again, care in tumah tahara, care in taking off tumas ha'maisros. So im re'inu shenog b'tzina b'soch b'esa mekabal oso. V'achar kach melam demoso. Now if we already see that in the privacy of his own home, and again we can go back to what I mentioned earlier. How much do we really know? But again, whatever we do know. If we see already that b'tzina, he's already taken upon himself things, so immediately we say, okay, you know what? We know that you're already accepting upon yourself, and so fine. You don't know all the halachas? That's not a big deal. Meaning in terms of Kabbalah, the Kabbalah just simply is a full commitment. you're fully committed and already privately you're starting to do things. So at that point in time, mekablam moso. Mekablam moso v'achar kach melamdim moso. He's got more to learn. Great, he's got more to learn. So he'll learn. But right now you can accept him right away. V'im lav melamdim moso v'achar kach mekablam moso. Otherwise, you can teach him, and afterwards, then and only then you're mekabel. Meaning, if we don't see that privately, he's starting to take things on, so first we teach him everything, and then the Kabbalah is accepted. Shimon Yochai Omer ben kach ben kach mekabel so v'hu lamed kedarko v'holech. Shimon Yochai is of the opinion that in either event, meaning whether it's there's private practice that's demonstrated or not, doesn't matter. With a Kabbalah, fine. And then at that point in time, he'll learn on the job training. He doesn't know all the laws of Tumah Tahorah. Understandable. There are a lot of laws of Tumah Tahorah. He'll learn.
We all said Nasi Vinishma at Har Sinai, right? So why doesn't the stringency that applies to Gary apply to us?
We're not talking about any kind of change of status in terms of whether you're a Levi, whether you're a Kohen, whether you're Yisrael, whether you're a Jew, whether you're not Jew. This is all to be afforded a higher reputation. The entire point of the Gemara over here is that you are now enjoying this higher reputation because of this Kabbalah, because of this pledge. Anything that you say is Tahor is in fact Tahor. It has nothing to do with who you are. It's just a question of your reputation. Tana Rabbanan. Mekablam l'chnafayim v'achakach mekablam l'taharos. Okay, without Rashi, you'd be lost in the Gemara. I was. So the Rashi, the Gemara over here says that you can accept kanafayim. Now, literally, that means wings. What are we talking about? So Rashi over here says, and we're talking about kanafayim, we're talking about netilas yadayim. Right, before you eat, so one of the rules that we're all familiar with is that you have to be notel yadav. Now, we know it in terms of eating bread. Back in the day, when trumas and maisos were a thing, and tumah tahara was a thing, so that meant that before you eat any truma, you have to wash your hands. Now, why? Because your hands are midrabanan a sheni latuma, and so therefore, before you touch truma, which can become a shlishi and pasul, so you have to wash your hands. Now, I'm going to show you Rashi in just a moment, where Rashi says washing your hands before eating truma, that's easy. What's the big deal? You take a cup, you fill it with water, you pour it over your hands are washed. So, in other words, of the Kabbalahs, of the pledges of allegiance, too, I'm taking this upon myself, kanafayim, which is the Gemara's way of describing yadayim. So, kanafayim are easy. So, you accept upon yourself kanafayim, but you said, but you know what, at this point in time, I'm not ready to take on all the stringencies of Tumah Tahorah. So, the Gemara says, that's fine. However, and it's because it's understandable. And it's understandable. However, imam ani mekabel ela kanafayim mekabel so. And let's say his commitment is only for washing his hands. The Braisa says that's fine, because right now that's what he's ready for. It's the lighter of the requirements of Tumah Tahorah. Okay, so that's all he's ready for right now. That's fine. Meaning, and we can trust that he washed his hands. Kibel taharos velo kibel kanafayim af lo taharos lo kibel. But the Braisa says, let's say the person makes the following pledge. I'm going to take on all the laws of Tumah Tahorah, but I'm not taking on washing my hands. So at that point in time, as Rashi explains right over here, well, that's ridiculous. Because of all the things of Tumah Tahorah, the thing that requires the least amount of effort is washing your hands. You are saying that you're going to take on all Tumah Tahorah, but you're not going to wash your hands? You obviously... Either you don't know what you're talking about, or you're being ridiculous. Either way, that's not an acceptable pledge. Tana Rabbanan. Mekablam chnafayim. Tana Rabbanan. Ad kama mekablam oso. Now, not clear. What's clear is the Gemara wants to know there's some time. That part's clear. Time for what? So the Rashi over here, ad kama mekablam oso. So he suggests divrei chaveros shenikablenu la'alter v'nachzikenu bechaver. So at what point do we have to see him doing a certain amount in order so that we can accept his pledge? So bechamei omrim lamashkin shloshim yom l'chsus shnei aser chodesh. Mashkim, liquids. The idea that liquids become tamei, we're not talking about machshir, we're talking about actual tumah tahara. So the liquid's becoming tameh, that's a din derabanan. So that is a quote-unquote lighter area of tumah tahara. And so therefore, for this, we only need a 30-day window, which at that point in time, we can now say, okay, it's taken on for 30 days, that's fine. However, when it comes to clothing becoming tameh, that's a din d'oraisa. So there we need to see 12 months of practice, where he's careful about tumah tahara as it relates to his clothing. Now, Beis Hillel argues, and he says that for both it's 12 months. In other words, we need to see 12 months of practice. Now, that comes out that Beis Hillel is being machmir. And immediately the Gemara reacts. That can't be. We've already cataloged in the Mishnayos and Adios all the times that Beis Hillel is machmir. And this is not one of them. So it cannot be that we have this machlokus correct. So the Gemara therefore makes a correction. Ella, Beis Hillel Amar Mechazeh Vechazeh Shloshim. Fine. So Beis Hillel does argue, and for both, it's going to be 30 days. Obviously a more lenient position than that of Beis Shammai. Okay. Gemara gives us a siman to help us commit the next Gemara to memory. Tana Rabbanan. Habal kabal divrei chaver tzarich lekabel bifnei shlosha chaverim. Uvanav bnei beiso einam tzrichim lekabel bifnei shlosha chaverim. Okay, the pledge of chaverus. So the pledge of chaverus has to be done in front of three. And it has to be done in front of three chaverim, which kind of makes sense. Meaning, you obviously, the pledge is going to be a good pledge if you're pledging in front of people who obviously care about the pledge. So,
is that for the purpose of publicity, or is it for the purpose of?
It's an excellent question, and I don't know the answer. It's excellent. Are they acting like a Beis Din, right? It's really good. The Gemara does not really clarify. Shimon Gamliel Omer Af Banavu V'nei Beis Tzrichim L'Kabel B'fnei Shlosha. Now, a debate in this brisa, meaning, so you are the head of the household and you're on board. Does that by default mean that your family's on board, or do they themselves have to make personal commitments as well? So it's a machlokes between the Tanakama and Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Tanakama says they're on board. You're the head of household, right? You're steering the ship, so everyone else on the ship is on board. And according to Shimon Gamliel, not for this. Meaning, again, we're not, you know, you don't have to turn this into a larger issue. It's just a question of chaverus and whether or not you're getting the status of chaverus. And according to Shimon Gamliel, no. In other words, if anyone who wants the status of chaver, they have to commit and pledge themselves. And Rishim and Gamaliel says you can't compare somebody who himself made the pledge versus the son of somebody who made a pledge, right? Well, I should get the chaver status. Why? Because my dad made a pledge. Rishim and Gamaliel says that's ridiculous. Meaning, no, to be a chaver and to have that reputation, so you yourself have to make the pledge. You have to commit yourself. Tana Rabbanan. Habala kabal dibre chaver tzarech lekabel bifnei gimel chaverim. Ve'afilu talmid chacham tzarech lekabel bifnei shlosha chaverim. Now, let's say the person is a talmid chacham. Does that automatically give him the status of being a chaver? And to which the Gemara says, no. That a talmid chacham still needs to make a kabbal in front of three chaverim. Zaken v'yoshe v'yeshiva nitzarech lekabel bifnei shlosha chaverim. However, somebody who's an elder and is in the yeshiva and he's saying shir, so he does not need to make this pledge of chaveris. Shekvar kiba alav mishah shiyashav. Because by assuming a position of being a magishir, rosh yeshiva, whatever title you want to give, so for that already, that this is this status of being a chaver subsumed under being a, whatever he is, a magishir or rosh yeshiva. Abashal omer avta mechacham inu tzarech lekabel bifnei shlosha chaverim. Abba Shaul says, I think the same thing is true with just a regular Talmud Chacham, right? If we could use that language, a regular Talmud Chacham. But in other words, according to Abba Shaul, a regular Talmud Chacham also does not need to make an extra pledge to be a Chaver, to get the status of Chaver. But rather, it comes along with being in the territory of being a Talmud Chacham. V'lo od el shacher mekam lefanav. In fact, he could be on the sitting end of hearing others making the pledge of Chaveris. I'm Rabbi Yochanan b'Mei Benosha Rabbi Chanina ben Antignos Nishnas Mishnah Zu. During the days of Rabbi Chanina ben Antignos, this Mishnah was taught. And the Gemara now tells of the following episode. Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Yossi istapik luhu milsa b'taharas. Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi had a question regarding Tumah Tahara. They were learning. And there was an issue in Tumah Tahara. The Gemara doesn't clarify exactly what it was, but they didn't know a particular halacha. Shadru Rabbanu Legabe Benoshel Rabbi Chanina Ben Antignos. And so what the Chachamim did is they sent I'm sorry. What these rabbis did is that they sent another pair of chachamim over to Rabbi Chanina ben Antignos. And the son, right? Good clarification. The son of Rabbi Chanina ben Antignos. So Azila Amru Leila Ayin Ba. Now so he says, you know what? It's a great question, and he says, but I need to research the matter. Ashkechua de Katayin Taharas. Now at this point in time, he was holding on to items, food items, or whatever items they were that were in a state of tahara. Osif Rabbanan Mididei Ligabaihu. So what he did is as follows. Now he had to leave the room in order to do research, but he didn't want to leave his taharos unprotected and unguarded. And so therefore, even though there were a pair of rabbanim who clearly were tamid chachamim, who were asking him a question in halacha, and I'll also add a halacha on taharos, but nevertheless he said, you know what? Hold on one second. He called off some of his own, he called up some of his own attendants, and he says, look, I got to go now to the base medrash. I got to research a topic. Can you stay here for just a couple minutes and watch my taharos for me? Even though there were two other rabbanim who were sitting in the room at the time. V'kai'ihu l'iyuneba. So that I can go and I can be ma'ayin, I can investigate. Also, I'm a leather Rav Yehuda, Rav Yossi. So now, these pair of rabbanim, who were offended, understandably, meaning they were clearly not trusted by the son of Rabbi Chanina ben Antignos about tum and tahara. Right? In other words, they were not afforded the status of chaver, even though they were clearly tamid chachamim. So, Amar Lehu Rav Yehuda, Aviv Sholzeh, Bizei Tamid Chachamim. So, now, when these rabbis go in back to Rav Yehuda in the report, they say that, you know, we were degraded. We were degraded, meaning he didn't trust us regarding Tum and Tahara. Af Hu Mevazeh Tamid Chachamim. And, right, the father... The father offended Talmid HaChachamim, and the son does the same thing also. He offends Talmid HaChachamim. So, Amar lo Rabbi Yossi. I knew you were going to ask that question, and I knew I'm incapable of answering the question, because it sounds like it.
So, in a way, he was right to not trust him.
So, Amar lo Rabbi Yossi. I'm going to avoid passing any judgment on anyone in the story. Amar lo Rabbi Yossi, and let's get all the details. Amar lo Rabbi Yossi, Kvod Zaken Yemunach Mimkomo. So he says, you know what? Put his honor and leave it alone. Meaning don't at all impugn his honor and his behavior. Elam yom shachar beis hamikdash noi kohanim sosol ba'atzmam she'in mosim esatar sechol adam. So from the time that the beis hamikdash was destroyed, so the kohanim, so at that point in time, they accepted upon themselves stringencies. Now, we'll have to add to the story, which we didn't know previously, but now we do, that Rabbi Chanina ben Antignos was a Kohen. And generally speaking, after Churban Beis...
Was he the son of a convert?
Rashi says he was a Kohen. I have what's in front of me right now. So Rashi says he was a Kohen. So the Kohanim after Churban Beis Sheni... So at that point in time, they accepted chumras upon themselves. They trusted nobody with Tum and Tahara. Meaning that the only ones that they trusted were themselves. And even if it's a Tam and Chacham, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. In other words, they trusted nobody when it comes to Tum and Tahara. Shein Mos and Estaros L'chol Adam, they simply do not give Taharas to anybody. And so therefore, I know you guys are Tamid Chachamim, and I know when you want to ask him a question. It seemed disrespectful that he would go ahead and he would ask other people to watch Tum and Tahara, and he had to leave the room. Meanwhile, you guys were right there. I know that seems disrespectful. That was just simply the conduct of Rabbi Chanina ben Antignos, and obviously his son as well is behaving in the same manner. Tana Rabban Chavah Shemes Ishto Ovanav Uvnei Beiso Hari Hein Beches Kasam Ad Sheyichashdu. You have a chaver, and he went to the next world, and the rest of his family that he leaves behind are still going to enjoy the status of being a chaver until we see otherwise. But in other words, they maintain that status of being a chaver. Let's say that you have a particular courtyard where they sell tchelas, and you know it's good tchelas. Now, when I say good tchelas, what's bad tchelas? So bad tchelas, as we learned back in Menachos, is kala ilan, right? There was a counterfeit blue that looked just like tchelas, but obviously did not come from the right source. did not come from the Chilazon. And so what unscrupulous people did is that they sold the Kala Ilan as Tcheles. And so when you sold your Tcheles, so you needed Hashkacha, or you needed a good reputation. So when a particular Chatzar, you know, the Chatzar is a courtyard, it's not people, but still, the people of that courtyard, so when they are selling Tcheles and they are known as reputed sellers of Tcheles, so they enjoy that reputation until something, until we know otherwise. Tan Rabbanan Eishas Amar Arshin Nisus Achaver V'chein Bito Shel Amar Arshin Nisus Achaver V'chein Avdo Shel Amar Arshin Nimkar Le She Nimkar Le Chaver Kulan Tzrichin Le Kabel Diver Chavers Betchila. So if you have somebody coming from a family of Amaratzim and they marry into a family of Chaver, fine, that's great, but they still need to make the pledge. Aval Eishas Chaver She Nisus Amar Arshin V'chein Bito Shel Chaver She Nisus Amar Arshin V'chein Avdo Shel Chaver She Nimkar Le Amar Arshin. If you have somebody coming from the family of a chaver and they marry an amaretz, and I know I'm thinking this as well. In other words, it's a little suspicious that they're doing so. But nevertheless, the Braisa says that they don't have to accept chaverus to begin with. Now the it sounds like from the Gemara that. Meaning, are we saying pshat in the Gemara is that while they're married to the Amaretz? Unlikely. Meaning, while they're married to the Amaretz, so I don't know if they're going to be able to enjoy that status of being a chaver. But let's say now the marriage has come to an end for whatever reason, death or divorce, and now they historically came from a family of chaver, so they don't have to repeat a pledge. That seems to be the pshat in the Gemara. Rabbi Meir Omer Avhein Shrichon Lekabalem Divir Chavers Lechatchila. And Rabbi Meir says no. But once they marry into the Amaretz family, when they return back to their family, they have to make the pledge anew. Rav Shimon Elazar Omer Mishum Rav Meir Maisa B'Yishachas Nisus Chaver. The Gemara tells a story about a woman who was married to a Chaver, V'Haisa Komas Lo Tfilin Al Yado. And being married to a Chaver, so he was a religious person, he was a pious individual, put on Tfilin every day. I know that's not a level of piety, that's just, you know. What we need to do every single day, but the basic idea is that, in other words, while she was married to the chaver, she puts the tefillin, she helps her husband by putting on the tefillin, and then same woman knows she's an amaretz, but then her next husband was an amaretz, v'aisa kasheres lo kishrei mochis al yado, and he was a tax collector, and tax collectors back in the day were not scrupulous individuals, and they skimmed a little bit off the top. It's a nice way of saying they're thieves. So they and she helped him out. So in other words, the wife is dutiful and helpful to her husband. So if her husband's pious, she's going to be pious. And if her husband's, you know, unscrupulous, she's going to help her husband out as well. And so this just accentuates Rav Meir's point that you see that when a woman is married to a man, so she's going to be influenced by whatever the husband is. And so therefore, when she leaves the Amaret, so she wants to go back into being a chaver, she has to make a pledge anew. Okay. Ad kan, that takes us to the end of today's daf. We'll pick it up tomorrow. Wait just 1 second. Just a quick recap. So the first half of today's daf was talking about where you are showing laxity in one area in halacha. Does that necessarily mean that you're lax in other areas of halacha? So what we learned at the end of the first half of today's daf is it's a machlokas between Rabbi Kiva and the Chachamim. Rabbi Kiva Stimasah, which is our Mishnah, is basically just because you're lax in one area does not necessarily mean you're going to be lax in another area. Unless, even within Rabbi Kiva, the area you're lax in is a lighter area. So at that point in time, we have to assume that if you're lax in lighter areas, you're going to be lax in harsh areas as well. But you can generally construct arguments of, well, this one is more severe than this one is less than severe than that one. However, the Sheet of Rameir, which we saw at the end of the Amud Aleph, top of the Amud Beis, is that once you show a laxity in one area, you lose your credibility in other areas as well. Second half of today's daf is dedicated to being mekabel chaveris. This basic pledge that you are going to be a chaver and given the reputation of being a chaver, so that everything you handle is in the state of tahara. So the Gemara spoke a lot, right? The second half of today's daf, which is a big daf, a lot about the details regarding the pledge, when it's said, who it's said in front of. At what point in time do you actually gain the reputation of being a chaver? So many details within this issue of accepting chaveres and making this commitment.